So the question is, how do women like us, age 50 plus, and dealing with high blood pressure, high blood sugars, and rising cholesterol levels, how do we keep our health numbers under control while we're trying to squeeze all the goodness we can from our life? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answer. Join me as I uncover the secrets of living a plant-based lifestyle, including how to avoid taking medicine simply by eating whole foods, shed the extra fluff around your middle without being hungry or joining a gym, make big lifestyle changes even if you think you have no willpower, eat food you love with no portion control. Let's get your doctor to say, wow, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. All this without meds or restrictive dieting. I'm Robin Wong, and welcome to No Pills, No Hunger. Hi, everyone. Welcome to No Pills, No Hunger. This is Robin Wong, and this is episode number 226. Hope you're having a great week wherever you are, whenever you're listening to this. As I'm recording it, it is middle of April here in Northern California, springtime. And yes, we have a sunny day today. It's starting to warm up. I'm thinking maybe it's time to get out and start getting the garden ready so I can have some of those fresh vegetables at the end of the season. What I want to talk to you today about is GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease. And oddly enough, this is one of the most common disorders of the digestive tract. And I didn't really think that was true until I started, working in the field that I'm in as a mentor and coach and talking to so many people and realizing that this is really common. A lot of people deal with GERD and they think it's normal. And this is the thing I want to tell you, it's not. It's a symptom of something else going on. And the same is true with a lot of people when I speak with them and they have chronic constipation or chronic diarrhea, and they think it's just normal for them. And I tell them, you know, those are symptoms of something else going on. The same is true, and it's not normal. And the thing is true, same is true with GERD. And so when you think about, you know, that burning feeling, that heartburn, it's a symptom of something going on. But what do? We reach for a medication to alleviate the symptom, the discomfort. And we kind of go about our way living our lives and don't ever really think about, well, what's causing this? You don't think about it until you actually are in the throes of dealing with it. And then you start trying to figure out what caused this. And so, you know, I think with, you know, GERD, two of the most common symptoms are that heartburn and then that regurgitation of the stomach contents up in the back of the throat, both extremely unpleasant if you're going through it. And I want you to realize it's not just the burning pain and that sour taste in the back of your mouth. You know, when you go a little deeper, you know, it's a big problem. It can cause damage if it happens chronically. What people are telling me that it does when I talk to them. And, you know, this causes millions of people to go to the doctor every year and millions of hospitalizations as well. And sadly, you know, it can, over the chronicness of it, it can become a complication like cancer. So I want you to realize that acid that's supposed to stay in your stomach, when it gets up into your esophagus, it's not supposed to be there. And over time, it can cause damage. So I want to urge you to treat it seriously and try to get to the underlying cause of what's going on rather than just treating the symptoms. Because you treat the symptoms, but if it's happening over and over and over again, and many of the people I talk to and I work with, it is, you know, we need to address that. We need to get on that. And again, it's not normal. So if you think about it, you start out with a normal esophagus, all right? It's functioning fine. And then if the acid creeps up into it, it starts to get inflamed. and you get kind of an inflammation of the esophagus, and esophagitis, I think is how you would say it. Anything with an itis at the end means it's an inflammation, whether it's tendonitis or diverticulitis. I mean, it just kind of tells you where it's inflamed. And a lot of us have a lot of inflammation, by the way. I talk to a lot of people. I do talks on this, and I hear it all the time. And with the esophagus, if it's constantly inflamed like that, it can turn into something called Barrett's esophagus, which then can turn into a cancer, adenocarcinoma. And the thing is we want to prevent that. We want to prevent the acid reflux in the first place. So yes, you would reach for a proton pump inhibitor or some sort of antacid, but no, let's back up even further. What's causing it in the first place? And so, you know, the sad thing about it is this is really increasing. In the last 30 years or so, I think this type of cancer in the U.S. has increased, you know, a lot. And it's even more of an increase than what we see happening in like melanomas and breast and prostate cancer. And I don't know if it's because of our crazy lifestyle and the stress a lot of us are under and the lack of sleep, lack of movement, or is it really is it our diet? And, you know, my money's on that and all of those things. But this, the case being, acid reflux is on the rise. And I know this to be true just in my own small practice when I work with people because I hear it a lot. And I know a lot of people deal with it. And I think in the U.S., the statistic I saw was 1 in 4 people were suffering at least weekly heartburn or this acid regurgitation, okay? Where, interestingly enough, it's only around 5% in some other countries, like in the Asian countries. And so what that tells me is that I think that's a suggestion that diet plays a role in this for sure. And that makes sense to me because I've seen results happen when we change people's diet. And it makes sense to me because, you know, we're told to avoid certain things when you have it, have GERD. And yet people just pick out 1 or 2 of those things and think that's what it is. So usually it's spicy foods and onions. And so, you know, I want you to realize that there have been studies, they're finally doing some studies around dietary factors and GERD. And they have been for a while, but there's been an increase in them. And what they're finding is that high fat intake is associated with increased risk when they compare it to higher fiber foods, which those appear to be protective against this. And so what they think is the reasons the fat intake is associated with GERD symptoms and that erosive esophagitis is because studies on volunteers have shown that when they ate fatty foods, that sphincter, there's a sphincter at the top of your stomach that's right where your esophagus connects, the job of that sphincter, it's like a valve almost, it's supposed to stay closed and keep the food and acid down in the stomach where it belongs. And what happens when you eat these high fat foods is that sphincter relaxes. And so it's just like, I've got some fat, I'm going to relax. And that allows some of that acid from your stomach to creep up into your esophagus, causing those issues. Now, it could also be that, you know, you overate. It could also be that you went to sleep too soon, because this is what I hear people saying. But yes, those all could be things. But let's look at the contents of your meal. And if you ate a high fat meal, it makes sense to me, right? That it's relaxed and now you're over full. So it's going to push it up and it's relaxed. So it goes up, or you lay down and it goes up. So those are other things, of course, that facilitate that happening. But let's look at the food first, because that's really what we know is going on. So I think in this study, they looked at volunteers. They had either a high fat meal, a McDonald's sausage and egg McMuffin, and then they compared it to a McDonald's low fat meal of hotcakes. And what they found was that there was a lot more acid squirted up into the esophagus after the high fat meal. Okay. So when you think about this, you're like, okay, I understand that. And the thing is we don't want this to happen chronically. When you think of when if you have this chronic issue happening over a long period of time, that's when that erosion really starts to happen in your esophagus. And they've done a lot of studies show the association between this Barrett's esophagus and esophageal cancer and diet. And in general, what they found was that meat and high fat meals appeared to increase the cancer risk. Okay. So I just want you to be aware of this. I'm not trying to scare you, but I think this information really needs to be known so you can make a choice about what you're consuming. And so in these studies, it was interesting. They actually looked at different types of cancers and, you know, that showed up in different areas and then tried to make associations with the type of meat that was eaten. So in general, red meat was associated more. Remember, I'm saying associated. I'm not saying it's a causation. It was associated with cancer in the esophagus, but poultry was more associated with cancer at the top of the stomach. Then they even looked at meat alternatives, such as beans and nuts, and they were associated with a significantly decreased risk of cancer, which is sort of consistent with the previous data we had seen and that was out there that was suggesting that, you know, plant protein sources were actually had a protective effect. And that's including the fruits and vegetables and that the antioxidants that come along with those foods actually were beneficial. And so then they looked at, okay, well, if antioxidants are the key, right? Maybe if we just give that to a people in a pill form, like a vitamin supplements, vitamin C or vitamin E, right? Maybe that'll make a difference in developing esophageal cancer. And what they found is no, it's got to be actually from the food. And you have to actually eat some vegetables, people, and some fruits, okay? And the odds of that in esophageal cancer were by half. And so it's, you got to eat the food and more importantly, you know, maybe reduce some of the other foods that you're eating to make this work for you. Interestingly enough, the most protective produce might be the red and orange vegetables, the dark leafy greens, some berries, even berry juice, apples and citrus. But just know that it really is a combination of eating those things and certainly reducing the things we know that are causing the symptoms. And so I thought it was interesting as well. They did a study of about 3,000 people and they found that, eggs actually were how much they ate eggs was a predictor of GERD. So apparently egg yolks appear to induce an increase in a hormone called a cholecystokinin. And that actually overly relaxes the sphincter that I was telling you about that separates the esophagus and the stomach. And that same hormone is increased by meat, which I think helps explain why when you're not eating those foods, you don't have the same reflux response, okay? So I guess the bottom line is GERD is common. It is. And if you're suffering from it, I'm sorry. It's miserable, I would imagine, having that burning. I've had it once when I was pregnant because I had a big baby in there that was pushing up in my stomach. I went to bed too soon after eating and it was miserable. And so this is having had that experience. I was like, wow, people deal with this all the time because that's what they're telling me. And it's an enormous burden. It's an enormous impact on their quality of life. And just know these frequent relapses of having it can really cause problems down the road. So if you have it on occasion, you know, I get it. But if it's chronic, like I hear it happening, what I'm saying is, what is that doing to your esophagus? What repercussions are going to happen from this constantly happening? And so I know you guys are all reaching, people that are dealing with this are reaching for, like I said, the proton pump inhibitors. There's billions of dollars that go into that business. And I think one of the stats I saw is that $4 billion were spent on Nexium alone and $3 billion on some other one. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of different ones. But I want you to know that it's not a long-term solution. It's not, okay? So sometimes taking those so much can actually cause nutrient deficiencies, all right? And they also can increase the risk of pneumonia, food poisoning, and bone fractures. So it's really important to find, the correctable risk factors and then correct them. And we know that, you know, how we eat is one of them. Some others are losing weight if you're overweight. If you're smoking, stop smoking. If you are consuming alcohol, sometimes that's contributes to it. And now we know, that eating more high-fat meals and meat contributes to it as well. Okay, and so just understand that, you know, there's these things that are in your control, and you know how I am. I'm about being proactive and really doing what you can with your lifestyle to avoid some of these things that are happening. And as a dietitian, we learn to help clients by, you know, telling them, oh, avoid the acid inducing foods like caffeine, you know, coffee and tea and, alcohol and peppers, right? And some of those things and high fat choices. But, you know, now we have, this is really forefront that we know fat makes a big difference. So, and we also know that same saturated fat that's in meat and dairy products and eggs also contributes to your high cholesterol. It also contributes to heart disease. It's not great for your diabetes. You know, it's just one more thing. And so if you're looking for proof and more things to kind of help you get on this wagon of eating, leaning into those other whole foods like, you know, beans and lentils and whole grains and, fruits and vegetables, then here's another one. Here's another one. If you have GERD, this is another thing for you to say, to look at. So again, often I hear, and is not this is you, but often I hear people will say, oh, I had GERD because I ate onions. And then I was like, okay, well, what did you, you know, eat those onions with? Because I know you just didn't eat onions. It came packaged somehow, right? And typically when I dig a little deeper, it's like a very high fat meaty meal or high in dairy meal. And, or it'll be spicy foods. And it's like, okay, I know you just probably didn't eat raw jalapenos. How did it come packaged? And it was maybe, you know, con carne, or I don't even know what, that's meat, right? Something with meat, or an enchilada that had a bunch of cheese and meat and all these things and the spice. And so yet we want to just pick out the one thing, spicy or onions, and say that's the cause of it. But I want you to look deeper and say, well, how did that food come packaged? Was that a higher fat meal? Was it fried? What else was in it that could be the culprit of your GERD? Maybe the onions did contribute to it, but my guess, and this is what I typically find, is my guess, and what I hear people tell me, is like, well, no, it actually was XYZ. And I'm like, okay. So I want you to understand that it's a bigger package. Okay. And that's where you start making the big impacts in your symptoms by looking at those foods. And we have the data to support this, that we know these high fat meals, you know, contribute to this relaxation of the sphincter that leads to your GERD. All right. It does. Okay. So I hope this helps. I hope you can alleviate these symptoms and alleviate the damage that might be happening to your esophagus from this chronicness of having these symptoms, and just, you know, get done with it and get on with your life. So if you're doing this on your own, you know where to start looking at the foods you're eating. Are you eating a lot of high fat foods? And reduce that, replace it with more plant derived foods and go there. And if you want help with this and more guidance on this, reach out to me. You can reach me at robin@nutritionwithrobinrdn.com or go to my website, nutritionwithrobin.com, and learn more about me and ways that I could possibly help you and mentor you in developing a lifestyle that you don't have these symptoms anymore. So you can get on with living your life and not have to worry about taking the medications or causing more damage. Okay. Have a great day, everyone. Thanks for joining me. Appreciate that you were here. Bye. Thank you for tuning in today. I know there's about a million ways you can spend your time, and I really do appreciate that you spent some time with me. Thank you. If you got something out of this episode and know someone who would also appreciate it, make sure to share it with them. We are all trying to get healthier in order to live well, and you can show them you care about their health by sharing these messages. Want to start improving your health today? One place I like to start with clients is breakfast, since morning habits are the easiest to build. That's why I created a guide called 3 Breakfasts to Lower Blood Sugars, which includes easy, delicious recipes for my favorite meals to start the day. Pick it up today for free at page.nutritionwithrobinrdn.com/guide, or click the link for 3 Breakfasts to Lower Blood Sugar in the show notes. Thanks again, and see you in the next episode.